Bryce Bedict rode hard along the back of the reserve line. He wanted his soldiers to hear the hoofs of his horse behind them, wanted them to know he was there, so that they would understand that wherever they hesitated, he would ride to them. When they needed the strength of a commander's will, he would find them. Riding parallel to the ranks, he scanned the formations. Companies held tight in their rectangles, with broad avenues between them. Their discipline remained strong, resolute. There would be nothing subtle in the assault to come, and they had not yet wavered. Horns sounded from the front ranks to mark the last 50 paces from the enemy's forward earthworks. That forlorn cry sang through Bryce, and he almost faltered. Is she alive? Do we give our lives to a cause already lost? Is my last gesture to be an empty one? Oh, beloved brother, I could do with some encouraging words right now. Better yet, make me laugh. What more fitting way to meet that moment when you fall to your knees than with sweet, unchained laughter? The kind that lifts you into the air, high above the grim violence of the land and all its sordid cruelty. He was riding inward along the line now, the ranks on his left, and in moments he would come into the clearing opposite the Perish-held centre, and before him, across the gap, he would see the Evertine Legion closing with the Colancy lines. Queen Abrastel, such a noble ally you have become. If my brother could but know of this, if your husband could witness this, some futures hold such promise as to convince you they can be nothing more than dreams, delusions built on wishful thoughts. You walk the steps of your life, and always that dream beckons, that dream waits. You don't know if it can ever be made real. You don't know that even should you somehow stumble upon it, you won't find it less than it was, less than it could have been. If only you could have kept that distance, kept it just outside arm's reach, forever shining, forever unsullied by the all-too-real flaws of your own making. Aranecht, how could you have given me such a thing? How could you have let me take it close, feel it here in my arms, so warm, so solid? When those dreams in that unreachable future suddenly rise up around you, how can you not be blinded to their truths? All at once it is here. All at once you are living in its very midst. Why then must you seek to pull away? He rode on, waiting for the roar of clashing weapons, waiting for the awakening of the power of the Forkrell Asael. And I must answer it, in the only way I know how. And when I am done, I know there will be nothing left of me. For so long he had not understood what he was meant to do, but now, with energies crackling the air, it had all come clear. Aranecht, my love, you now hold the best in me. I pray that, for you, it is enough. He bolted into the gap, soared on the reins of his mount, and swung round to face the massive earthen fort where waited the Perish Greyhelms. But he could see nothing of what was happening behind the banked walls of earth. In the center of the maze of trenches and berms, there was a broad marshalling area of packed earth cut with narrow slits to gather the blood of the wounded who would be brought here during the battle. Cutters waited standing close to stretchers, their faces smeared with ash to keep sweat from dripping into open wounds. Their sawing and cutting tools were laid out on skins beside leather buckets of steaming water. In all the trenches that Krughavr could see into, her blessed soldiers stood with their eyes fixed on her as she made her way towards the centre, where waited Shield Anvil Tanakalian, and, a dozen paces behind him, a young woman whom Krughavr had never seen before. There was something strange about her eyes, but the mortal sword could not yet determine what gave them such a disquieting regard. She was barely into womanhood, dressed in ragged deerskins, her hair long and ropey with filth, and the smile curving her lips looked faintly ironic. Krughavr ascended a ridged ramp and stepped out onto the hard ground. She set her helm down and drew off her gauntlets. Tanakalian spoke. It is our hope, Krughavr, that you have come seeking to return to the fold, that you will fight with us on this day, that you will lead us in battle. She drew herself up, settling one hand on the pommel of her sword. "Yes, I would lead the Grey Helms in battle, Shield Anvil Tanakalian, but not against the Lethary or Balkando. Rather, I would our soldiers quit these trenches." She lifted her gaze, studied the avenues leading back up the slope, and scowled. "Do you not see what they have done? The Asael have made the Grey Helms a forlorn hope." Tanakalian sighed, tilting his head as he regarded her. "There is another way of seeing our position here, Krughaver. Simply put, Brother Diligence does not trust us, and you would prove to him that the Perish are as treacherous as he suspected."
"Treachery? Now that is a curious thing, Shield Anvil. I am not surprised the Asael does not trust you, given your precedence."
The Shield Anvil's face flushed. "The betrayal was yours, not mine. But have we not already been through all of this? The Grey Helms heard your arguments. They heard mine. They voted." Krughaver looked round, hard expressions unyielding on all sides.
"On this day, brothers and sisters, our allies will seek to break the tyranny of the Fokral Asael. But that is not the only reason for this war. Indeed, it is the least of them. Hear me, all of you. Long ago, a foreign god was brought down to this earth. He was torn to pieces, but they would not let him die. No, instead, they chained him, as one would bind a wild beast, as one might chain a wolf. And so bound, so caged, that god has known nothing but unending pain and anguish. The gods feed upon him. The wretched among us mortals sip his blood in prayer. And these Fokral Asael, they hold his heart in their cold, cruel hands. My brothers and sisters, on this day we shall seek to shatter those chains. We shall seek to free the fallen god. But more than that, we shall endeavor to return him to his realm."
She pointed upslope.
"And yet, where do you stand? Why, you stand at the side of torturers, and all the words of justice they so eagerly whisper in your ears, they are nothing but lies."
The young woman came forward then, and Krughaver saw now what gave her gaze such strangeness.
"Wolf eyes. One silver, one amber. Blessed throne, she is our destriant. The wolves of winter look out from those eyes. Where had she come from?"
The destriant spoke in the Lethary trader tongue.
"Mortal sword, we are stirred by your words. But then, what do we know of mercy? We who have never felt its gentle touch. We who are hunted and ever hunted down. Shall I tell you of the memories rushing through me now? Will you hear my words?"
Krughaver felt the blood draining from her, the heat of her passion stealing away. Beneath her heavy armor, she was suddenly cold.
"This woman is my foe. Tanakalian is as nothing compared with her. Destriant, I will hear your words."
The young woman looked round.
"In your mind, see a herd, so many, great, strong beasts, and they see us running beside them or standing off in the distance. They see our shaggy heads sink low. Yet to all their nervous attention, we are indifferent. Our eyes study the beasts, we seek scents on the wind, and when at last we drive that herd into flight, whom do we single out? Which of these great, terrible animals do we choose?"
Tanakalian answered with unfeigned excitement.
"Destriant Setok, the wolves ever choose the weakest among the herd, the old one, the wounded one."
Krughaver stared at Setok.
"The wolves would feed on this day, Destriant, upon the heart of the crippled god?"
Setok gestured, a loose wave of one hand.
"Tell your allies, ignore us in this battle. We'll not leave this nest, and when this day is done, we shall see who remains standing. It does not matter which of you has won, for you will be bleeding, your head will be hanging, you will be on one knee.
"And then shall the Grey Helm strike!" cried out Tanakalian. "Can you not see the truth of this, Krukhava? Are you so blind as to still hold to your foolish conceit?"
Krukhava was silent. After a long moment, wherein the only sounds came from the advancing armies on the plain, she approached the shield anvil, halting only when she stood directly before him.
"Tanakalian," she said in a low rasp, "we are not wolves. Do you understand? When we act, we are privileged or cursed to know the consequences. The wolves of winter are not. They have no sense at all of the future. There can be no worship of the wild, Shield Anvil, without the knowledge of right and wrong."
Tanakalian shook his head, avid pleasure gleaming in his eyes.
"You have lost this, Krukhava. You cannot win. It is not just me anymore, is it? Not even just the Perish. Now you face a Destriant, and through her our very gods."
"That child is mad, Tanakalian."
"I do not fear her, Krukhava."
That struck her as an odd thing to say. Deeply shaken, she lifted her gaze, studied Setok.
"Destriant, shall this be the only game the wolves play?"
"This game they know well."
Krukhava pushed past Tanakalian, pushed him out to the side, no longer important, no longer relevant.
"Yes, they do, don't they? The glory of the hunt, yes? I will speak to the wolf gods now, and they would do well to hear me."
Shouts from the Perish Grey Helms, offended, indignant, shocked, but Setok simply shrugged. Krukhava drew a deep breath. The ground was trembling beneath her now, and in moments the forces beyond this fort would collide.
"You wolves think yourselves masters of the hunt, but have you not seen? We humans are better at it. We're so good at it that we have been hunting down and killing you for 500,000 years. But we're not content with just the weak among you or the wounded. We kill every damned one of you. It may be the only game you know, but hear my words. You're not good enough at it."
She advanced on Setok now and saw the Destriant flinch back.
"I have found my moment. I see the comprehension in her eyes. The wolves of winter have heard me. They finally understand. Let me show you another way. Let me be your mortal sword once again."
But it was not the wolf gods who understood. It was only Setok. And in the moment before the wolf gods poured through her, she spun round in her mind.
"No, heed her words. Can you not see the truth? You cannot hunt here."
But then they were upon her, tearing her apart in their frenzy to reach through, to close jaws on the hated human.
"No, I loved you. I wept for you."
She screamed, and it was the last sound Setok ever made. Krukhava's eyes widened upon seeing the woman's face transform into something unhuman. The flesh of her arms burst as the bones seemed to twist their way free, black tendons writhing like serpents. Her body stretched, the shoulders hunching, the eyes flared. Shrieking, she launched herself at the mortal sword. Fangs, welters of boiling blood and thick saliva, a sudden burgeoning of mass, black furred, looming huge before her, and then a figure slipped past Krukhava. Tanakalian.
Forgotten Tanakalian.
His knife flashing, the blade plunging deep into Setok's chest. A deafening howl thundered, staggering Krukhava back. Blood sprayed from Setok's eyes. She leapt away from the knife, suddenly flailing, groping blind. Another howl sounded, battering the air. Dark blood spilling down from her mouth and nose, the woman fell onto her back on the earthen steps and then curled up like a child. Krukhava stumbled forward.
Tanakalian, what have you done?
He had been thrown to the ground by that terrible death cry, but now he clambered back to his feet, the knife still in his hand. The face he turned to Krukhava horrified her.
This was supposed to be my day, not yours, not hers. I am the hero, I am.
Tanak,
this is my day, mine.
He rushed her,
She threw up an arm, but the gore-smeared blade slipped beneath it, punched hard, stabbing through her neck from one side to the other. Krukava fell back, struggling to stay on her feet, and then pitching round to land hard on one knee. The side of her face where the hilt had struck throbbed. She could feel that. One hand reached up, collided with the leather-bound grip. The knife was still stuck through her throat, and her lungs were filling with blood. She opened her mouth, but could draw no breath. Tanakalian was shrieking.
They were coming through! I couldn't allow that! The Asael! The Asael! He would have taken them! He would have killed them!
She fought back to her feet, dragging free her sword. Seeing her, he backed away.
I saved our gods! You fool! You killed one of them! Did you not hear it die?
The world was growing black on all sides. Her chest was heavy, as if someone had poured molten lead down into her lungs.
Blessed wolves! I did not intend this foul murder, this day, so sordid, so human.
Rearing upright, blood pouring down her chin, Krughava advanced. Tanakalian stared at her, frozen in place.
We needed her out of the way, don't you see? Don't you?
Her first swing smashed into his right side, shattering ribs, slicing through the lung before jamming halfway through his sternum. The blow lifted him from the ground, flung him 3 paces to the right. Astonishingly, he landed on his feet, scattering the cutters. Blood and unidentifiable pieces of meat were spilling from the enormous cut in his chest. Krukava closed again.
Enough for one more. Enough.
Her second swing took off the top half of his head, the blade slicing across just beneath his eyes. The broken bowl spun over the slick back of her blade, then off to one side, loosing the brain it held and, with it, both eyes, swinging on their stalks. What remained of Tanakalian then pitched forward, landing on his chin. She sank down onto her knees. All breath was gone. The world roared in her skull. Someone was at her side, fumbling with the knife still thrust through her neck. She feebly pushed the hands away and then fell forward. Her face settled against the hard clay, and there a gouged furrow, no wider than a knuckle, running out from under her eyes. She watched it fill with blood.
I wanted a better death. But then, don't we all?
2 thunderous howls erupted in quick succession from the Perish position, their ferocity plunging Bryce Bedick's horse into a blind panic. He was almost thrown from the lunging, terrified animal, but then he managed to set his heels in the stirrups, drawing tight the reins. The horse bucked, and then, unexpectedly, it ran straight towards the fort's high bank. He looked to the top edge of the high-banked wall, but he could see no Perish soldiers watching him, no one preparing for his arrival. He saw no one at all. Bryce eased the reins. There was no fighting this bolting beast, not yet. He rose in the saddle as the animal tackled the slope. The ascent was steep, uneven, and the straining effort burned out the horse's fear as it lunged upward. Reaching the top of the berm, Bryce checked his mount's advance, pulling on the reins hard enough to make the animal rear once more. His heels took his own weight as he shifted to take the movement, his eyes already studying the array of faces turned now towards him. Where was Krughava? Where were all the officers? He saw the nearest grey helms, almost directly below in the first trench, reaching for their pikes. Swearing, Bryce wheeled his horse round while it still stood high on its hind legs, sent it stumbling back down the slope. Stones and clouds of dirt followed the frantic descent.
Gods, they could have ended this for me right then. Wasn't anyone watching?
No, they had all been facing the other way. I caught them completely by surprise. What was happening in that camp? He suspected that he would never know. He was riding across level ground again, his horse's hoofs kicking through the dusty plough tracks, and ahead and to his right, his leathery soldiers had reached the first of the earthworks. Behind the companies, crews swarmed to position the heavy onagers, driving wedges beneath the front runners to lift the arc of fire. The enemy had begun releasing their own salvos of heavy bolts from raised fortlets flanking the trenches. Those deadly quarrels tore deep gashes into the advancing ranks. His soldiers had begun dying.
Because I asked them to. Dying in the name of a failed wish. I have brought them to this. But why? Why do they follow? They are no more fools than I am. They know my title means nothing. It is an illusion. No, worse, a delusion. Nobility is not something you can wear like a damned cloak of jewels. You can't buy it. You can't even be born into it. The nobility we talk about is nothing but a mockery of all that it used to mean. By no measure am I noble. Why do you follow? Gods, why do I presume to lead into this?
Bryce Bedict drew his sword, but the taste of ashes filled his mouth. So many conceits gathering here, crowding this moment and all the moments to come.
Now then, shake yourself awake, Bryce. The time has come to find us a name.
He twisted his horse round, headed for the nearest avenue between companies, and rode to meet the enemy. High Cutter Sindikan was still kneeling beside the body of Krughava, staring down into her pale, lifeless visage. In the clearing behind him, all the officers and veterans had gathered, and the arguments were raging fierce on all sides. Horror, shock, and confusion. The parish was moments from tearing itself apart. Sindikan was the eldest among them all, a veteran of many campaigns, a soldier in the long, hopeless battle that was staunching wounds, breathing life into dying lungs. And once more, he could only sit silent, looking down at yet another of his failures.
She came among us, a brave, brave woman. We all knew her pride was ever her enemy. But see here, she came to us. Imagine how doing that must have stung that pride. And yet, even over this powerful flaw within her, she finally triumphed. What could be more heroic than that?
When at last he straightened, though in truth it was no more than 30 heartbeats since Krughava's fall, all the voices fell away. He was the veteran. He was the one they would now turn to, desperate for guidance.
Oh, all you fools! What to do? What to do now?
He cleared his throat.
I do not know what has happened here. I do not know if the shield anvil slew a young woman or a god, nor can I judge his reasons for doing so. This is beyond all of us.
A young soldier called out, Brother Sindikan, do we fight this day? He'd been thinking about that from the moment of Krughava's fall. And he recalled looking across to the hacked corpse of Tanakalian and thinking,
You are only what we deserved. Brothers, sisters, on this day, yes, we must fight.
Silence answered him. He had expected as much. They would not follow blindly, not any more.
Not after this. Brothers, sisters, there has been murder in our fold. We were witness to it, and in witnessing we are made part of this crime. We must be cleansed. Today we must fight to regain our honor.
But who is the damned enemy?
And here the old veteran found himself at an impasse.
Wolves help me, I don't know, and I'm not the one to decide. Veteran, am I? Yes, but the only wise veterans are the ones who have left war and killing behind them. No, I'm just the biggest fool among you all. Oh, fine then. Time to fall back on useless superstition. Isn't that what old soldiers turn to when all else fails? Brothers, sisters, we must seek a sign. We must look to the world, here and on this day. We must...
And then his eyes widened, faces turned, eyes stared. As the Prince of Lether lunged into view atop the high berm at the fort's facing wall, surging up and on to the narrow, ragged edge, and how the horse found purchase there was a mystery. That beast then reared, hoofs scything the air, with the prince glaring down at them all. And at that moment, from either side of the valley's length, came the sound of battle's clash.
Gods, take me.
I think I just pissed my breeches.
Abrastel sat astride her charger. The beast felt thin beneath her, but was still quivering in anticipation.
Bastard loves this. The stench of blood, the screams, wants at them. God's war is a fever.
She glanced back at Spax and his mass of warriors.
Hold them, war chief. Wait for it.
The Gilk Bargast glared up at her.
But how long? Your damned soldiers are dying on that front. At least let us charge and take out one of the fortlets. Those onagers are carving you bloody.
She knew that. She could see the terrible casualties those perfectly emplaced weapons were delivering as her legions struggled to overrun the first line of defenses.
I said wait, Spax. I will need you and the Teblor to move fast when that assail finds out. But what if it's all gone wrong at the spire? Firehair, we can collapse this flank. Just let us loose, damn you!
But something had caught her eye. She wheeled her mount round, stared towards the center.
Jekan's fat cock! The Perish are pouring out of their trenches! Spax!
I see them! Do you see Krughava?
Abrastel shook her head.
They're too far away. Listen, form a line to hold our inside flank, warchief. If I was commanding that position and saw it uncontested, I'd do precisely what they're doing right now. Out and into our unprotected sides.
They'll see us!
Spax was now at her side, a heavy axe in his hand, a spear in the other, his face half hidden by his ornate shell helm.
And wheel round to bite the leathery flank. Bryce has no reserves to guard against them. If they do that, Abrastel said in a snarl, you know what to do, Spax. Climb up their hairy asses, yes, but just ready your warriors,
she cut in, and then jabbed her spurs into her mount's sides.
I'm going for a closer look. Not too close!
She pushed her horse into a canter, the beast's armor cladding a weaponsmith's clamor around her. When four bodyguards rode to join her, she waved them back. She hated the fools, worse than hens, but the one messenger who drew close, she gestured forward. Beyond the Perish, the leathery army had locked jaws with the first line of defenders, but they too were being savaged by the Colansi onagers. She saw that the prince had deployed his own artillery, and the rate of fire from these heavy weapons was superior to the enemy's. At least three positions were concentrating fire on the nearest fortlet, and the raised redoubt was studded with heavy quarrels. Foot archers and skirmishers had advanced under the cover of that counterfire and were now assaulting the position. The prince knew his business, but would it matter? Already the losses were appalling, and she knew her own Evertine soldiers were suffering the same behind her. And now these Perish. A part of her wanted to sink her teeth into the throat of the Grey Helms. For all that betrayal and treachery thrived in the court games of the Balkando Kingdom, out here it was a far deadlier indulgence.
Maybe this is teaching me a lesson about backstabbing, lying, and cheating to get your way. No, try as I might, I can't swing it across. The palace is my world, and I'll run it the way I like.
Hoofs thundering, she was fast closing on the Perish. The soldiers were smoothly forming up now that they'd cleared the fort, and she saw them wheeling to face her.
You want us first, do you? Spax will be so pleased.
But that wasn't tactical. No, clearly they should have swung to face the leathery. And as she drew yet closer, the front ranks before her made no effort to draw weapons.
Can it be? Has Krughava won them over? Where is she? Where is Tanakalian? Erent's Nudge, who's commanding this army?
Abrastel waved up the messenger.
Stay close until we're within earshot, and then halt yourself. I will ride on. Listen well to this parley, soldier. The lives of thousands may well count on it, should I fail to win clear.
The young woman, selected for her riding ability, was pale beneath the rim of her helm, but she nodded.
Your eyes are better than mine. Do you see a commander anywhere?
Highness, there is one, with the grey face. He has been gesturing, sending out orders. There!
And she pointed.
I see him. What's with the face paint?
He's a cutter, Highness. A field medic.
Whatever. No matter. Looks as if he's the one wanting to talk. I don't like this.
What has happened to Krughava? They slowed to a canter, and at the appropriate distance the messenger halted, whilst the queen trotted forward. She studied the cutter, an old man, at least insofar as these grey helms went. His face was well worn with tracks of sorrow and loss, and she saw nothing in that face to suggest that anything had changed in his outlook. Her unease deepened. The cutter raised a hand in greeting.
Highness, the Grey Helms welcome you. I am Syndican, elected commander following the tragic deaths of the Mortal Sword and the Shield Anvil.
Abrastol felt her jaws clench. The words had struck like a blow to her chest. Leave it, woman. Now is not the time.
You are arrayed. State your intentions, Syndican. As you can see, we've got us a fight here, and I really cannot waste any more time while you decide which way the fucking wind's blowing.
The man recoiled as if slapped, and then he drew a deep breath and slowly straightened.
The Perish Grey Helms humbly place themselves under the command of you and Prince Bryce.
He made a faint gesture to the troops behind him.
We face you because we could not determine the whereabouts of the prince. Highness, the pure Forkrel Asael was injured in a clash with our destriant. It is safe to assume, however, that he will recover. And when that happens, we anticipate an awakening of dire sorcery.
Can you defend against it?
The old man shook his head.
I fear not, Highness. We have lost our place as the weapon of the wolf gods. You see us as we are, simple soldiers seeking to regain our honor as men and women. That and nothing more.
As soon as that pure is made aware of the attack on the spire, he will disengage as many soldiers as he feels he can spare.
We understand this, Highness.
Are your soldiers rested, Syndican? Can you fast trot down this valley and find an undefended ascent?
She made her voice louder, addressing the soldiers waiting behind the cutter.
Grey Helms, can you stand in the path of the Colansi, who will soon drive east to the spire?
In answer, the soldiers shipped their shields onto their backs, began tightening straps. Abrastol grunted. Who needs words? Syndican spoke.
Do you require that we delay the enemy or stop them in their tracks?
There are not enough of you to stop them, Commander, and you know it. If I can, I will spare you my Bargast and the Teblor, but they may be arriving late to the fight.
We shall hold until they arrive, Highness.
Abrastol hesitated and then called,
What I've seen of you thus far, Perish, has been sticks up the ass and plenty of proper marching and not much else. Well, now's your chance to show the world what you can do in a real fight.
They seemed to weather this, either in humility or in shame. She had expected a wave of anger, but saw not a single spark. Her gaze fell once more to the cutter.
Syndican, you'll need to work hard at inspiring this lot. They're broken. Yes, Highness, we are. But on this day, I believe that this is no weakness. We shall answer the world.
She studied him for a moment longer and then collected her reins.
I trust you'll forgive my Bargast if they face you while you pass.
The man simply nodded.
Fare you well, then. If justice truly exists, perhaps your mortal sword will stand with you, if only in spirit. Seek to match her measure, all of you, and perhaps you will indeed find your honor once more.
Dragging her mount round, she set off. The messenger fell in alongside her. Abrastol glanced over.
You've the lighter burden here. Ride ahead and inform Warchief Spax that the Perish march to take position in the expected path of the Colansi relief force. They will pass south of our position at a fast trot, but he is to face his warriors on them the entire time. Repeat my words back to me.
The messenger did so without error.
Ride then. Go.
Abrastol watched the younger woman swiftly pulling away.
Was I ever that young? It's the curse of nobility that we must be made to grow up all too fast. But then, look at you, tits barely budding, and you're in the middle of a damned war, and I can't even remember your name. But should we both survive this, I'm sending you to learn embroidery,
and a year or two of flirting with artists and musicians and other ne'er-do-wells. Growling under her breath, the Queen of Balkando shook her head, rose in her saddle to glare at the forward lines of her beloved legion. They'd yet to even take the first entrenchments, and that slope was a mass of dead and dying soldiers, getting deeper with every moment that passed.
Erentz, Tug, they've got us by the balls here. We need to push harder. No let up on this pressure. Time for the Safi, then, assuming they've gotten all yellow-eyed on that brave spit they guzzle before battle. They should be well primed.
But were they all doing little more than going through the motions?
14th daughter, can you hear me?
Thought not. I could use your eyes right now, just to see where things stand over there. You should be in the damned bay by now. You should be in a good position to witness everything. Once more she shook her head, too many things in her damned skull. Her horse was tiring, and she slowed her pace a fraction. She might need one more charge out of this beast. The queen takes the sword and shows her face beneath the mask. But the world does not tremble as it should, for the mask only comes off in the face of death.
Husband, dear me, your wife strayed too far this time.
She drew her sword as she closed. The Safi commander was standing to the right of the royal entourage, his eyes upon her, as were the eyes of virtually everyone else. She pointed her sword directly at him, saw him suddenly straighten as if in delight, raising his spear in one hand, and then he was moving, his tall, dark figure speeding across the ground, back to his troops. And she saw them now, too, leaping and dancing in a frenzy of excitement.
Oh, Khaleesi, you have no idea what is about to hit you.
Captain Feveran, 9th cohort of the Evertine Legion, slid back down the slope on a greasy mass of bodies, swearing all the way down to the base, where he was thrown up against the shins of the soldiers struggling to do what he'd just tried. He'd lost sight of his own troops, those that remained alive, but such details barely mattered now. The only cohesion left was the one that defined the living from the dead. This was slaughter. Twice they had momentarily overrun the first trench, only to be thrown back by indiscriminate fire from ranks of onagers, the huge quarrels tearing through multiple bodies, blood and gore exploding in torrents, men and women flung about like rag dolls. Shields shattered with impacts, breaking the shoulders behind them, driving soldiers down to their knees. The bank of the first berm was a ceaseless mudslide of all that could spill out from a human body, streaming over pale limbs, over staring, sightless faces, ruptured armor and tangled embraces. Cursing, he struggled to find his feet again. He could feel another push coming from the ranks pressing against him, and wanted to be in a position to ride that tide upward. They were going to take that damned trench, no matter. But the Evertine infantry were being jostled, the solid lines broken apart, and Feveran swore upon seeing tall Safi pushing through, their eyes bright yellow with that infernal drug they took before battle, the froth thick on their lips.
"Clear paths!" the captain bellowed. "Clear paths!"
But the command was not needed. Nothing would stop the Safi spear-wielders, not this close to the enemy. Lighter armored, lithe and fleet of foot, the warriors seemed to clamber like spiders up the slope of the berm. In one hand they held their spears, and in the other a pick of some sort, its business end a splay of talon-like hooks that they swung down into dead and dying flesh alike, pulling themselves yet higher. In moments the first line of Safi had reached the top, and over and out of sight. The screams from the first trench intensified.
"Follow!" bellowed Feveran. "Follow!"
And up they went. Somehow they'd lifted him to his feet, but his mind remained lost in a deafening roar. Brother Diligence raised his head, struggled to find his balance. Officers surrounded him, healers crowded close, and from a great distance the sounds of battle took hold of the air above the valley, shaking it without pause. He sought to make sense of the cacophony in his head. He heard screams, horrified screams, rising in waves of panic and dread. but even that seemed far away.
Far away, yes. That voice, so far away.
Abruptly, he shoved his helpers from his side, and then staggered as at last he could make out the words, the sources of those desperate screams.
Sister Reverence!
Her answer came in a savage torrent.
Brother Diligence, your battle is faint. We are attacked. K'chain Chimal, Tlani Mas, we cannot hold. God's the slaughter!
He silenced her hard as a slap.
You must hold, sister. We are coming.
Looking around, he saw the panic in the eyes of the Watered. They had felt her, had heard her frantic cries.
Attend! He bellowed. Maintain the defenses of the two lowest tiers. The rest are to withdraw to the high road. They must march east to the spire with all haste. Weapons and armor and one skin of water and nothing more. You have one bell to get 25,000 soldiers on the road.
Blessed Pure, the Perish have betrayed us.
He waved a dismissive hand.
Leave them. I shall awaken Akrast Corvalane. I shall obliterate the enemies before us. Wait, I want the forces on our left to counterattack. Lock on to the enemy flank. I want those Bolkando and Bargast driven from the field. Now, clear me a path down to the second tier.
The world seemed to be trembling beneath his feet. As he made his way down, choosing the right flank, he quickly scanned the battle before him. The damned Lethary fought as if blind to defeat. And they would be defeated, of that there was no doubt. Even without his voice, they could not hope to overrun his defenses.
But I want them on their knees, empty-handed, heads bowed. And my soldiers shall rise from the trenches and walk among them, their weapons swinging. Not one Lethary shall leave this place. Not one. And when I have driven them down, I shall turn to the other flank. It is stronger, I can see that. The white faces remain in reserve, but none there can hope to stop me. They will be held in place by the counterattack. I will have them all.
Almost directly below, he saw a tight mass of Lethary, a standard waving above them. And there, to his amazement, two K'chain Chimal, Vagath soldiers, one being ridden by a scale-armored figure, the other revealing an empty saddle. They were flanking a lone Lethary on a horse, a man struggling to form the tip of a wedge pushing its way up the first berm.
The K'chain Chimal we shall have to cut down the hard way, and Sister Reverence faces an army of these creatures. We were complacent. We were fools to think them without cunning. Are they not humans, after all? I see you, Commander. I will take you first. The first to kneel. The first to submit to execution.
He continued his rapid descent of the earthworks, feeling his warren awakening within him. Below, Lethary sorcery crackled in a grey wave, swept up and over an onager redoubt. Bodies erupted in crimson mists. Furious, Diligence reached out, found a handful of squad mages. With a single word, he crushed their skulls. Reaching a ramp, he made his way across and took position atop the second tier. Across a distance less than a bowshot, the Lethary commander had attained the top of the berm, his Vagath clearing a path with vicious sweeping strokes of their halberds that sent bodies spinning through the air.
I see you, roared Diligence.
Bryce Bedict felt his horse crumpling under him, and as he flung his feet clear of the stirrups and twisted to evade the falling beast, he saw an enormous quarrel driven deep into its chest. Landing in a crouch, he readied his blood-smeared sword. The trench below was a mass of Colansi infantry, pikes thrust upward and awaiting their descent. On either side of the prince, the Vagath were fending off flanking counterattacks, and their ferocity forced the breach yet wider. The moment he straightened, three shouted words struck him like a fist, snapping his head back, and all at once he was under siege. The Fokrul Asael had found him. At last, you saw. You saw and wanted me first. Oh, friend, you are most welcome to me. He rose under the barrage, lifted his head, and met the eyes of the pure.
I see you. Kneel, yield to my will.
You see me? Tell me, Asael, whom do you see?
I will command you. I will take all that is within you.
Bryce Bedict, King's Champion and Prince of Lether, spread open his arms and smiled.
Then have me.
And from his soul, from a deep unlit world of silts and crushed bones, there came a stirring, a sudden billowing of dark clouds, and from this maelstrom, names. A torrent, a conflagration.
Seden Sa, Lord Protector of Semai, Haravathan of the River People, Yesendra, the Mountain of Eyes, Woman of Sky above the Arrested Hidan, Blessed Hela, Twin Horns of the Elananas, Horastal Ne'eru, Sunbearer and Giver of Crops in the Valley of the Sanathal, Itkovas, Lord of Terror among the Kolas Kachain Chemal of Ethila's Nest.
And the names rose unending, flowing through Bryce Bedict's mind, one after another.
Tra-Thalor of the Twin Rivers, Sower of Spring among the Gralan, Adast, Face of the Moon among the Corson.
All the forgotten gods, and as each name whispered out, sweeping into the torrid current of the Fokrul Asael's warren, his terrible power of the voice, of words and all their magic, Bryce felt part of himself tearing away, snatched loose, drowned in the swirling flow. There was no stopping this. The pure had found him in the manner that Bryce had desired. As he rode to the forefront of his army, as he fought between two Kachain Chemal, as he delivered unopposable slaughter,
"Find me," he had prayed. "Find me. I am waiting for you. Find me."
Once begun, once the warren was a torrent between the Asael and the prince, there was no stopping it. Power fed power, and its fuel was justice.
Let them be known, all the forgotten gods, all their forgotten people, all the ages past, all the mysteries lost, this unending stream of rise and fall, dream and despair, love and surrender. They deserve utterance one more time, one last time. Take them, take me, you with your power in words, me with my power in names. Without me, your words are nothing. Come, let us devour each other.
He could see the pure now with a sudden clarity. A tall, ancient male, one arm outthrust, one finger pointing across at Bryce. But the Asael was motionless, frozen in place. No, Bryce's eyes narrowed. He was crumbling. His face was a stretched mask, thin over the bizarre skeletal structure underneath. His eyes wept red. His mouth was open, pulling taut as the jaw angled down, as if the names were pouring down the pure's throat, as if he was drowning in their deluge. Bryce's own soul was shredding apart. The world, this valley, this battle, all fell away. He could feel the pressure of the sea now, could feel his legs planted in shin-deep mud, and the current rushed past him, scouring the flesh from the bones of his soul, and still he had more to give. Clouds of silt billowed and seethed around him. He was losing his vision. Something was blinding his soul, something new, unexpected.
No matter, I am almost done with him. No, the names do not cease. They can never cease, and once my voice is gone, there will be another. Someday, to guard what would otherwise be forever lost. For you, Fokrul Asael, I have held back on one final name.
the one to gather up your own life and carry it into the darkness. This is the name of your god, Forkrell Asael. You thought it a name forgotten, but I remember them all. Blinded, deafened by some unknown roar, feeling the last of his soul ripping free, Bryce Bedict smiled and spoke then the last name, the name of the slain god of the Forkrell Asael. He heard the Pure's shriek as the power of the name reached out, clutched him tight. For this one god, alone among them all, did not come bereft of its people. This god flowed into the soul of its own child. It does not do to abandon one's own gods, for when they return, so unexpected, they are most vengeful. The current pulled him from the silts, drove him forward into a darkness so complete, so absolute, that he knew it to be the abyss itself. I have saved my people, my dear soldiers. Let them fight on. Let them take breaths in owning and in release, in all the measures of living. I have done as a prince should do. Tehal, be proud of me. Aranicht, do not curse me. The sorrow of the ages closed around him. This was one river from which there could be no escape. Do not grieve. We all must come to this place. My friends, it is time to leave. Impossibly, he felt hands close from behind, hard as iron over his shoulders, and a harsh voice hissed in his ear, Not so fast! Faint stood close to Aranicht. The Atreseda was standing, head bowed, her arms outthrust, but her hands and forearms had vanished inside a billowing grey-brown cloud, and water was streaming down from her elbows. The air around her was rank, thick with the decay of tidal flats. Faint could see the veins standing out on Aranicht's taut neck, could see the muscles of her shoulders straining, and the Atreseda was slowly being pulled forward. Whatever was inside that swirling cloud was seeking to drag her into its maw. Off to one side, Precious Thimble was on her knees, shrieking without surcease. They had seen Bryce Bedict there atop the first earthen embankment. They had seen the standing stones rise from the ground around him, pushing upward through dirt and rocks, almost black with slime and filth. They had seen the prince's armor and clothing disintegrating, and then on the man's pallid skin, dark swarms, tattoos, runes, emerging only to be torn free, spinning wild around him, and then rushing across, hammering into the Forkrell Asael. And then, as if within a whirlwind, Bryce Bedict vanished inside swirling gloom that was so thick as to be impenetrable. It spread out, devouring the huge menhirs. Aranicht now began howling. She was being pulled forward, and Faint suddenly understood.
She has him. She has hold of the prince. Gods below!
Faint staggered towards the Atreseda, but something resisted with devastating pressure, bitter cold, and she was flung back, gasping, spitting out blood. On her hands and knees, she lifted her head and looked across. Most of Aranicht's arms had disappeared inside the cloud, and now Faint could make out words in the Atreseda's cries.
Mael! Damn you! Help me!
Faint crawled over to Precious Thimble.
Stop that screaming, witch! Look at me! No, here, look at me!
But the eyes that fixed on Faint belonged to a mad woman.
I can't help her. Can't you see that? She's gone too far, too deep. How is she even alive? It's impossible.
Precious Thimble pulled away, scrabbling like a crab.
He's lost. He's forever lost.
Faint stared at the witch as the words slowly sank deep.
But that's not fair. Not a love like that. No. You can't take it away. Don't you dare kill it. Precious, what can I do? To help, tell me.
Nothing.
Go to Hood, then.
She spun round, drawing a dagger.
Mael's an elder god, but Aranicht must understand this. He cannot answer this prayer, not the way it is now. I won't stand here to see this love die. I won't.
The blade cut a glistening slash along her left arm, and then, fumbling to take the knife in her left hand, she carved deep diagonally across her right forearm. Forcing herself forward, she reached for Aranecht.
Mael, take my blood in offering! Just fucking take it!
The pressure sought to rebuff her, but she pushed harder, and then she was through, floundering, unable to breathe, the cold crushing her. She saw her blood billowing out as if underwater, saw it spin on currents, so much of it, she almost lost sight of Aranecht. Desperate, feeling her bones cracking, Faint pushed closer, reached out and took the Atreseda into an embrace.
Mael, don't you dare, tell me this is not enough!
Precious Thimble had stared, disbelieving, as Faint struggled to reach Aranecht. Her blood was a thick billowing cloud streaming out from her, curling round to whirl into the dark cloud. There seemed to be no end to it. Someone had taken hold of the witch, strong arms closing round her, lifting her from the ground. Twisting now, she looked up. Ambi Bol's face was almost unrecognizable.
"This is bad magic," he said.
"Save Faint! Save her!"
But the man shook his head.
"No one can live in there."
"Save her, Ambi! For my love, save her!"
His frown deepened, his eyelids suddenly fluttering, and he met her eyes.
"What?
You want me? I'm yours, damn you! Just save Faint!"
Bol threw her down, a visage darkening.
"All the fun ended with you. I don't want you, witch. I don't ever want to see you again."
Precious stared up at him, and then she snarled.
"I will chase you, Ambi. I'll hunt you down no matter where you go. Year after year I will follow you, I swear it. There's nowhere you can run to, you understand me? Nowhere!
I hate you!
The only place you could hope to escape me is there!"
And she pointed at that billowing cloud of blood now obscuring Faint and Aranecht. Ambi made an animal cry, spun and ran heavy-footed straight into the crimson cloud. Precious Thimble fell back.
"Gods below, but that man is stupid!"
"Hold on, my love,"
whispered a voice close to Faint's ear.
"Some laws even an elder god cannot easily defy, but he's trying."
Faint felt the life leaving her. She was lying against the legs of Aranecht. She could feel them cold as bars of ice. Were her eyes open? All she could see was the redness of her own blood.
"Sweetest, is that you?"
"Always knew you had a romantic streak. What a thing to do!
I'm dying."
"Looks like it. Regretting your moment of madness?"
Faint shook her head, or tried to.
"Only if it fails."
"Well, how often do we regret successes?"
"Is it enough, sweetie? It's all I have."
"You're in water, fool. Of course it looks like a lot. And if you stay in here any longer, you'll bleed out for sure. Now, wish I could help you. Wish I could help both of you. But I'm just a ghost. Well, not even that. Could be I'm just a voice in your head, Faint, born out of some bizarre, misguided guilt."
"Oh, thanks for that."
A foot slammed into the side of her head, half stunning her, and she struggled feebly as hands groped across her body, briefly closing on one of her tits before moving on, and then back again for a second squeeze. Abruptly, someone was lifting her from the muddy silts, throwing her over one bony shoulder. She felt one hand clutch and then leave her thigh, felt the fingers brush her knee as the arm reached out. A deep grunt seemed to thrum through Faint, and she felt the stranger's feet slip suddenly, as if pulled by some inexorable pressure. And then the heels planted firm, and, impossibly, she felt him heave back against the current. One step, and then another. Another. Ambi Bol reappeared from the crimson cloud, Faint hanging limp over one shoulder. His other arm was stretched back behind him, and Precious saw him strain, saw him leaning hard, and then out from the cloud emerged Aranecht, held by the back of her collar, and after her, the naked form of Bryce Bedict. The cloud erupted, burst apart in a welter of icy water. The four figures fell to the ground, faint rolling out almost to the witch's knees. Precious Thimble stared down, saw the blood still pumping from the woman's slashed arms. She closed trembling hands on both wrists, healing spells tumbling out on her breath. Soldiers were rushing up, shouts filled the air. Precious Thimble's hands tightened on the wounds, but now there were only scars beneath her palms, and she could feel Faint's pulse.
But, gods, it's there. I can feel it. It's Faint.
A sudden giggle escaped her, but that was just relief. She'd always hated puns. Proper women did. She scowled down at the scars.
Hold on. Where did I get that power?
Looking up, she saw Ambi Bol lying motionless on the muddy ground. Beyond him, soldiers crowded round Aranicht, who knelt with her prince, cradling his head on her lap. And then Precious Thimble caught a glimpse of motion from one of Bryce's hands. Out from under the cloak someone had thrown over him.
I can't believe it.
Faint stirred, groaned, eyes opening, stared unseeing for a moment, and then focused on the witch. She slowly frowned.
I'm not dead? No, I've just healed you. The Atreseda made it out too. So did the prince. Your blood bought passage. Though how that watery piss you call blood ever passed muster in the eyes of an elder god, I'll never know. What? But how? Who saved us? Who dragged us free?
Sudden coughing from where Ambi Bol lay sprawled. Precious Thimble shook her head.
The only one who could faint. Some idiot from Black Dog Swamp.
The dozen menhirs erupting from the earthworks around Prince Bryce Bedict had ruptured the embankment for 60 paces, driving fighting soldiers from their feet, bodies tumbling into the trenches even as enormous mounds of earth and stones poured down, burying scores alive. The Vergath beneath Grub elected to escape the chaos by leaping forward across the entire trench and landed close to where the Fokrul Asael stood. A Kachain Chemal had shattered its halberd some time earlier, and now wielded a double-bladed axe in one hand and a falchion in the other. The Fokrul Asael stood with his face stretched as if in agony, tilted back, the eyes shut and the mouth stretched wide open. When the Vergath advanced, he gave no sign of awareness. Two swift, thumping strides and the falchion swung down, taking the motionless pure between his right shoulder and neck. The blade tore down through the chest, ripped free in a spray of bone shards. The other Vergath had followed its kin and now came in from the left. An instant after the first Vergath's attack, its heavy single-bladed axe slammed into the side of the Asael's head in an explosion of skull fragments and gore. The Fokrul Asael collapsed in red ruin. Even as Grub struggled to wheel the beast round, two heavy quarrels hissed across between him and the Vergath's head and punched into the side of the other Vergath. The impact staggered the giant reptile, and then it fell over, hind legs scything the air.
Back! Back across!
The Kachain Chemal burst into motion, sprinting down the length of the berm, 15-20 paces, and then wheeling to plunge down amidst crowds of Colansi in the first trench. Weapons hammered down, slashed and chopped a carnage-strewn path through to the other side. Pike blades glanced across the armor encasing Grub's legs and girdling his hips, and then they were clawing up the other side, winning free atop what remained of the first bank. Grub looked round for the prince, for any officer, but the chaos reigned on all sides. Had Bryce fallen? There was no way of knowing. But Grub now saw Lethary soldiers lifting their heads, saw them tracking his thumping trek across the front of the warring forces, watching the Vergath clear attackers from its path with devastating sweeps of its bladed weapons.
They're looking to me, but I know nothing. Fool, nothing but a life of war. Look well, decide what must be done.
Twisting in the saddle, he scanned the climbing slope to his left, squinted at the succession of fortified tiers, and saw soldiers streaming from the highest positions. But between them and the Lethary...
Four trenches?
No, this is impossible. We've lost a third of the army against this first trench alone.
Grubb faced the leathery ranks once more.
"Withdraw!" he shouted. "By the prince's command, withdraw!"
And he saw, all along the front, the leathery soldiers disengaging, shields up as they backed away, others dragging wounded comrades with them. Another quarrel hissed past, too close. Cursing, Grubb kicked at the sides of the vigas.
"Down from the ridge, along the front! Put those weapons away and find us some shields! Better yet, pick up some of the wounded, as many as you can carry!"
The beast skidded down the slope, righted itself, and staying low beneath the cover of the first berm, began picking its way through heaps of bodies. Grubb stared down at the terrible carnage.
"I remember on the wall, and that man and all the ones who fell around him. He fought and fought until they overcame him, brought him down. And then there was a cross, and he was nailed to it, and the crows spun and screamed and fell from the sky. I remember the old man on his horse reaching down to collect me up, and the way he wheeled outside the gate to stare back, as if he could see all the way we'd come, the bloody road where I was born, where I came alive. I remember that world. I remember no other. All of the brave soldiers, I am yours. I was always yours."
The Colansey counterattack from troops stationed in the next two trenches met the advance of Safi and Evertine legionnaires in an avalanche of iron fury. Rolling down with the slope, along the wide descent tracks or up and over the berms, they slammed into the Balkando forces like a storm of studded fists. For all the wild fury of the Safi, they were not sufficiently armoured against heavy infantry, and the Evertine soldiers were unable to close a solid shield wall with the Safi in their midst. The first lines were overwhelmed, driven underfoot, and the entire Balkando front reeled back, yielding once more the second berm, and then the first trench, and finally the first bank of earthworks. With the enemy gaining momentum, the legion was pushed back still further. Almost none of the Safi remained by this time, and as the Colansey rolled out onto level ground, they rushed across, only to collide with the legionnaires. They met a solid shield wall. The impact sent bodies and weapons into the air, and the crush made both sides recoil before closing once more in savage fighting. Queen Abrastel, still mounted, her sword and forearm painted with blood, forced her charger away from the inside edge of the Evertine line. The animal's muzzle was gushing blood from a frenzied bite against a visored face, and its hind flanks were slashed through the cladding, spattering blood with every muscle surge. But she could feel the pounding of its heart, and she knew that her horse had never felt more alive than at this moment. It was impossible for her not to grin at the terrible joy in the beast she rode. Impossible to not find herself sharing it. Still, they'd arrived upon the crux, and looking to the west, she saw the leathery forces withdrawing from the assault, though their onager salvos continued unabated. The Pure had done as she had expected, seeking to break her hold here, forcing the leathery away from any hope of marching to the spire by blocking the valley, but only if they could succeed in turning the Evertine legion. She rode hard round to the back of her legion. Still held in reserve, the Bargast ranks were readying weapons, and Abrastel caught sight of Warchief Spax standing atop a small hill of bundled supplies and straining to see over the Evertine ranks to the front of the battle. She saw him turn to her upon hearing her horse's drumming hoofbeats. She reined in before him.
"I've never swum in a sea of blood before, Fireherr. How was it?"
The queen glanced down to see herself lathered in gore. She shook her sword clear.
"How fast were those Perish moving?" she asked. "A good clip, almost as quickly as a band of white faces on the raid. If they have anything left after tackling the valley side, they should be almost in position. But, Highness, you've seen how many are headed their way."
He shook his head.
"Can they even slow them down?"
The warchief shrugged.
"Depends on the lay of the land, I suppose. If it's a broad front they need to hold, no, they'll barely slow 'em."
Abrastel cursed under her breath as she swung her mount round.
thought furiously for a moment, and then nodded. Very well. War Chief, take your warriors and the Teblor and move with all haste to support the Perish. Whatever you can manage, understood?
You send us to our deaths, Highness.
Aye. She bared her teeth at him. I show you my coin. You show me your love.
I wasn't complaining, just saying.
We will screen you here.
Highness, you can't hold against this counterattack. We can see that.
We will screen you for as long as is needed, Abrastol said firmly. Now get going, War Chief.
If we do not meet again, Fireherr, I should tell you.
And Spax leapt down from the mound of supplies.
I went and knocked up your daughter.
Gods below!
You'll have years of doting on that little runt. You'll know it for mine, 'cause it's got my eyes. Just get going for Erend's sake!
Laughing, Spax raised his axe and waved it in a circle over his head. As one, the white faces lunged into motion, eastward. Impressed in spite of herself, Abrastol watched in silence for a moment. Spax was following her gaze.
Aye, we live for this, Fireherr. We'll give a good account of ourselves, I promise you.
He looked up at her.
Sing songs about us, and remember to tell your court poets that's Gilk with one K.
She frowned down at him. How else would it be, you fool?
Fare you well, my queen, Spax said,
bowing even as he turned away. When he'd trotted a dozen paces, Abrastol called out,
Spax?
The war chief glanced back.
Boy or girl, I'll make sure it's named after you. But that's the only favor you'll get.
Smiling, the Barghast waved his weapon, and then was on his way again. She watched the Teblor falling in alongside the mass of white faces, and then she swung round to study her legion. Sure enough, they were being driven back. These Colansi heavies were anything but soft. Abrastol adjusted her grip on the sword in her hand, collected the reins once more.
Let us make them remember us.
She was about to kick her horse forward when a rider thundered up on her left.
Highness!
Abrastol stared. A damned Lethary.
That was a long ride. What news?
The messenger, a blue rose lancer, saluted.
Felicitations from the Prince, Highness.
Felicitations? Gods take me. Sorry, go on.
Highness, the pure Fokrul Essail is dead. Only mixed blood Essail remain in command. The Prince hereby informs you that he has disengaged his forces from the Colansi positions, and that he has established dug-in defences along the Onager line on the valley floor, and will commit a third of his remaining forces there.
Excuse me, a third?
The Lethary nodded.
Prince begs to inform you, Highness, that he is on his way to your position.
Abrastol looked round and then cursed. Take a moment to rest your horse, sir, and then ride with all haste back to Prince Bryce. Inform him he'd better hurry. But the messenger wasn't interested in resting, and he wheeled his weary horse round and set out at the gallop.
Damn, but those lancers know how to ride. And damn me, young man, if we both survive this, I'm going to give you a ride you'll never forget.
Abrastol sighed and then shook herself. With a low growl, she kicked her horse forward.
My standard to the front! Get on with you! Follow your damned queen!
Someone had found clothing and armor for the prince. With Erenicht close by his side, he stood on the high ground and watched his troops swarming to entrench all along the line of onagers. Lines of soldiers were moving the wounded back on stretchers, while still others retrieved serviceable weapons from the field, and overseeing it all, a young man riding a Kachain Chimal. Bryce was still struggling to regain himself. He did not know how Erenicht had managed to save him, or how she even survived her descent into that lifeless warren. While still only half conscious, he had heard fragments of conversation, and it seemed that the three foreigners, Faint, Precious Thimble, and Ambi Bole, had all had a hand in his resurrection, and then he'd caught the name Mael.
Old man, we owe you so much.
Why are we Bedicts so important to you? But it wasn't me you did this for, was it? It was for Tehol, your chosen mortal, the one you would have wanted as your own son. Rest assured, I'm not complaining. Someone brought him a helm, and he took it with a grateful nod, tugged it on and fastened the clasp. An officer crowded close. Sir, we have found you a horse. It would do the troops good to see you again as soon as possible. Bryce shook his head. Our Malazan guest has things well in hand, Lieutenant. He has issued orders in the prince's name, sir. A clever thing to do, under the circumstances. He may be young, but he does command a presence on the back of that lizard. From this moment forward, he is to be considered my second. Make this clear to all the other officers.
Yes, sir.
Bryce glanced over to see that a horse had been brought forward. Aranecht spoke.
Still, beloved, it would be good for them to see you.
I am tempted to place Grub in command of our relieving force, he replied. When she stepped closer, he held up a hand. I am not recovered. I feel as likely to fall off that horse as stay on it. Oh, I'll mount up, and as long as the beast isn't moving under me, why, I should cut a strikingly inspiring figure. He shot a look up at the Imperial Standard and winced. So long as no one looks too carefully. He reached out and took hold of her hand. Aranecht, I am glad you fought for me.
It was mail, she said, and faint's blood. And then, if not for Amby Bol, we still would have failed.
Will you think less of me if I choose to remain here, commanding these defences?
Bryce, if I had to, I'd have tied you down to keep you here. Close to me. We're not saving you just to see you fall to some errant arrow. No, you stay back, issue orders, and leave the rest to everyone else.
He smiled. You have begun to show a stubborn side, Atreseda.
Idiot!
She lit a stick of rust leaf.
The only thing just begun is you noticing it. But that's what makes the first flush of love so dangerous. And once it fades and you start seeing clearly again, why, it's too late.
Still smiling, he took the reins and set a foot in the stirrup, pulling himself up to slump in the saddle with a low groan. From all sides, voices rose upon seeing him. Grimacing, Bryce straightened and then raised one gauntleted hand. The roar redoubled in its intensity. He saw Grub riding up the slope towards him. The boy didn't look much like a boy any longer. He was splashed with drying blood, and from somewhere he'd found a blue rose lance, and its iron point had swum in blood not long past.
Prince Bryce, I didn't know you. I mean...
There is little time to waste, Bryce cut in. I am placing you in command of the relief force. They're almost assembled. In fact, he squinted eastward, they can shake themselves out on the march. The Balkando are losing ground. Lead them, Commander, and be quick about it. Grub saluted.
Sir, when we close, I may ride ahead.
Would any of us expect otherwise? Bryce asked. Just don't get yourself killed. Nodding, the Malazan youth kicked at the flanks of the Vigath, and the huge beast wheeled round and set off.